Maybe it's useful just to explain the dynamics that were at play here and how silly these processes were. The funding formula on the capital side assumes that all schools, or all schools on average across your school board, should be 100% full. Otherwise, you can't have any money for building new schools. Mm-hmm. Now, if you picture the city of Ottawa, it has the Ottawa River across the north. The city, the old city itself, is right in the middle, and then in a big U around it is the old Carleton Board of Education, and those two boards were merged. And of course, the Carleton Board of Education generally was where all the suburbs were growing like crazy, all kinds of portables around their schools and so on. Whereas downtown, of course, everything was a little older, and the utilization of the schools was not nearly the same. And so you had a situation where, on average, because the downtown was quite a bit bigger, we were not quite 100% capacity. In fact, we were quite a bit under that. And so those of us out in the suburbs, which is where I live, but not me, of course, but some of my friends out there, would look downtown and say, hey, you guys got to close a whole bunch of those schools so that out here in the suburbs we can build some. And in terms of the funding formula, they were right. And maybe in terms of there needing to be some closures, they were right as well. We do have a responsibility to use our real estate efficiently. And we did make some closures, six or seven so far to date, except more recently we closed about another five, but largely in order to build new schools to replace them. So anyway, what built up was this urban-suburban split, and we have a rural area as well. And there was a certain amount of tension that didn't make any sense. I mean, what you really ought to do is figure out what schools you need and try to put them in place. We're finally doing that now. But back then, we went through, I don't know, three or four of these reviews. Very, very painful and not very productive, because in the end, the trustees wanted to be very careful. We took a long-term view. We looked out 15 to 20 years. Mike Harris and his common sense weren't necessarily going to be around all that time. And one of the things we wanted to make sure and hedge against was maybe there are going to be some policy changes at some time in the future, like, let's say, smaller class sizes, in which case you need more rooms. And if you've sold off all your space, you're not going to have that kind of flexibility. So we needed some flexibility. We felt running at about 90% on average might make sense. Now, of course, Mr. McGuinty has been elected, just jumping forward for a second here, and indeed he does want smaller class sizes, a cap of 20 on the class sizes for JK to grade 3. And so, yeah. And if it wasn't for the Harris hangover, $5.6 billion, we'd probably be well on our way to doing that. I think we'll get there. So the closure processes were really painful, and they made no sense. And I'm glad that those kinds of processes are behind us, at least for now. I should tell you that in the fall of 1999, December actually, I was elected chair for the first time. And there had been two chairs previous to that, and we were just heading into our third year as a new board. And I think the main reason that people wanted me to run for chair was because I had a kind of board-wide perspective. Now, this was good for the board, I think. It wasn't so great for my poor constituents, who weren't really sure that was the best way to operate. But my thinking was that if you look at what happens in Ontario, the funding formula operates the same way everywhere. And so if you want to improve things in my zone, Kanata, you had to improve them everywhere. So you behave accordingly. In any case, I mentioned this 6-6 split, and the first vote for the chair was a tie, 6-6. So I don't know who broke the tie, but somebody did.
Thank heavens.
And I became chair, and I stayed there for 4 years, and I declined to run last December. I figured, for many, many reasons. But right the next day or two, I got my first interview as a chair. One of my main jobs as chair was to be the spokesperson. And so I went on the CBC in the morning show, and John LaCherty, the morning show guy for many, many years, started off by asking a question which rambled on and on quite a bit. And in the middle of it, he dropped a little bombshell, which I guess he kind of thought I might ignore. And he basically insulted all of my fellow trustees, calling them not very talented or words to that effect. And so I'm thinking about my communications advisors again, what they might want me to do. I didn't do that. I took John on and I think set the tone right there. We've got a great bunch of trustees, and I think you find most of your boards do have great trustees, a lot of diversity and a lot of talent, and I'm very proud of them. I told John so.
So then, meanwhile, the parents, we're getting into the fall of 2000 now, we're seeing the writing on the wall. We decide that not only are we going to mobilize to get good trustees this election, we're going to, some of us ourselves are going to run for trustee. So we work flat out in the fall of 2000 and elect a couple of new progressive trustees. Now, as far as we're concerned, this is part of the democratic process. It's not just enough to go out there and vote. You have to make it happen. You have to find good people. You have to give them support. And certainly that's what we did. So that by the time the new election had happened in that fall, we had an 8-4 split in our favor instead of the old 6-6 tie, which made for a very big difference in the politics of the school board at that time, those two new people added to the board. In the spring of, I think I'll let you talk about the budget a bit. Jim, are you going to talk about the budget now?
Well, okay. Which budget are you at now?
Yeah, well, we've got a few of them to go through.
Okay, so we're in early 2001 now. I should mention just that in October of 2000, we put out a publication. This was still the first board 6-6 tie. We did manage to get out a publication that we called Formula Facts just before the election, and we rolled into the election and got the 8-4 split, which it was our mandate to get aggressive. Mm-hmm. And the electorate spoke, and democracy was alive, and people had been listening. So in 2001 then, we did have to roll into a meeting, a very difficult budget situation. I should say that we, the eight trustees, had very regular meetings, usually on a Sunday night in the home of one of the trustees. We moved it around so nobody could find us. We were very careful never to have more than six of us in the room at once, because, of course, that would have been a quorum and it would have been a meeting and that would have been illegal. And we were not going to step over that line. But what we did was we talked strategy, we talked tactics, we talked events. Probably as important as anything is we gave ourselves mutual support, which was really necessary. It was very, very difficult for some of us, really for all of us, to go through all of the pain and agony and the decision-making that we had to do. So getting on to what we had to do, we had to prepare another budget in 2001. What we did was we prepared what we called a draft but balanced budget. In order to balance it, we used another $20 million of our reserves. That was our final $20 million. We were at the wall. We did not pass the balanced budget. We sent it to the minister. We said, "Minister, this is unacceptable. It's propped up by $20 million of reserves. That's not sustainable. And even at that, our facilities are declining. Our programs are not good enough. We don't have enough money under your funding formula to pay our staff," and on it went. This was not good enough. Under the Education Act, the minister is allowed, under certain circumstances where she perceives there are some financial problems, to send an investigator to town. We invited her to do that. We thought it was pretty obvious that there were some financial difficulties. We voted on that budget three times, just to give ourselves sober second and even soberer third thought to see whether anybody wanted to change their minds. The pressure was enormous. There was a lot of people saying, "This board is going to go bankrupt in September. The banks won't pay you if you don't have a balanced budget, because that's required by law. You've got to pass this budget." There was going to be a huge staffing challenge, depending on just how the budget was finalized, because the staffing process normally starts in March, and there's a lot of bumping and seniority and all of this going on. And this was going to have to all happen in about a week or two, depending again on how things unfolded. Huge pressure. What Minister Ecker did was she said, "Well, you have a draft balanced budget. Thank you very much. Just go implement it. Just go implement it." So we didn't have any choice. We had told our staff to be ready for that. They were ready for it anyway, and away they went implementing it. But think about what the impact of that was. That minister took responsibility for that budget. And if you talk about who's accountable for what, we were not going to be accountable for the mess that the minister was propagating at that point in time. She took responsibility, and that's what we wanted. Later in October, we came along with Formula Facts 2. I mentioned we'd done a Formula Facts. Formula Facts 2 really established the baseline, the kind of costs that we felt were required and the kind of shortfalls that we felt resulted from the funding formula. We put that out very widely across certainly Ottawa, and I think it was a fairly popular item in Ontario. We put up billboards at that time to let folks know that we were unhappy with Mike Harris. Of course, people said, boy, what a waste of money putting up billboards about Mike Harris. Well, you know, what were the costs of that? They were absolutely minuscule compared to the mess that we were in. So we sent about as clear a message to Mr. Harris as I think we could, and that sets us up for about 2002, I think.
Yeah, we're getting into the fall of 2001, 2002. At this point, parents had set up the Provincial Issues Lobbying Task Force. At the same time, there were, of course, more closures going on to special needs classes. We'd have regular events every month or 6 weeks where we'd get parents out. Often they'd be events that would cater to the needs of special needs parents. We'd get 100 to 200 people coming to these events month after month. And even though we had a very conservative newspaper, daily newspaper, one of Conrad Black's former holdings, and he had done his best to fake all the editors in that newspaper in his image. He remade them all and put in new people when he came there. Nonetheless, all these special education cuts were too much for them to stomach. We got tremendous coverage. We got regular coverage because we focused specifically on that issue. We had groups of parents who would regularly write in letters to the editor, hundreds of letters to the editor, and we'd post them all on our website, at which point the newspaper couldn't ignore the fact that all these hundreds of letters were coming in, and they'd print some of them at least, you know. We had regular meetings with our trustees. We let them know that we were behind them 100%, so that despite the fact that there was a conservative daily newspaper, we found other channels to get our message out, and we did it over and over again in different ways and in different venues. Finally, we started organizing a rally in late 2001 at this point, to take place on January 31st. Now, you folks, you don't know what January 31st is like for a rally in Ottawa. We picked the worst day, the coldest day, the snowiest blizzard, the most awful weather to go out for this rally. It was time to coincide with the Conservative Party's leadership convention at a downtown hotel. We brought our kids out on this cold, bitterly cold night, but we also had all the support of our wonderful union friends who hired buses to bring parents from schools throughout the region, who volunteered their time to drive those buses into town on a cold, blizzardy night to get them all there. And we'd be walking around in our little circles with our little signs, and each of these buses would come up, and just seeing a busload of people was enough to cheer us on and warm us up that cold, cold January 31st night. At one point, one of our trustees who was in the line with us noticed that one of the hopefuls for the candidate, the leadership of the Provincial Party, was sitting at a table right by the window of the restaurant looking out at us. And our trustees, bless their soul, this woman had lots of gumption. She was a former union organizer in another life, and she just marched right up to that guy and started telling him off in no uncertain terms right in the window of this restaurant. Well, needless to say, we're all rocking around, freezing our buns off, but we're happy as all get up and cheering her on, and she just tore a strip off of him in that restaurant. So I think Jim has a few little nuggets to add too there about what his end of the demonstration was doing that night.